everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Becky.
And Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hi.
So this episode, before we get into the meat of this episode, because there is a lot of meat.
A lot of lecture.
Because I nerded out a little bit. Before we want to get into that, I want to do a romance term of the week because I fear that I'm going to say things and people are going to be like, what the heck is she talking about? So one of the things that's going to come up in this episode, we're going to talk about lists. And then one of the things that comes up and best-selling lists and stuff like that. One of the things that comes up oftentimes when you are speaking to an author or somebody in publishing, they will say, I got my letters, or I have a goal. I want to get my letters. Well, what the heck does it mean to get your letters? So when an author says they got their letters, it is often means they are receiving a recognition or validation within the literary world. They can refer to earning credentials such as a degree with a Master's of Fine Arts and MFA in writing, or gaining membership to a respective literary organization like the Authors Guild. But it can also refer to earning your best-selling letters, such as being listed on major best-selling lists like the New York Times or USA Today. It serves as a significant mark of achievement in publishing industry. But I need to caveat this with that. For us at Buzzing About Romance, we tend to read heavier on the indie side, not recently, but traditionally. If we look at our top books every year, the books we tend to spotlight, we are solely focused on the indie market more than the trad market, right?
Yeah.
The letters in the indie market are not the same because the majority of the indie market that we're reading are in Amazon, and nobody is putting on their book cover Amazon best-selling author.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really think about that.
They'll put it in their blurb. Like, we saw it because it was really obnoxious in the Sweet Spot blurb. At the beginning of the Sweet Spot. Yeah.
It's like a new thing that they've been adding to recently.
Well, I mean, I get it.
It's an achievement.
Yeah. Especially if you're not getting recognized by, you know, the other lists because you're an indie.
This is true.
Well, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how all these lists work because, as we know, it is now near impossible for an indie author to make a list.
Yeah.
Unless you have a distribution contract. And I will say, I don't believe authors with distribution contracts, in my opinion, should no longer be considered fully indie. They are now hybrid.
Hybrid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they are not dealing in the same world as someone whose books are fully indie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, honestly, the minute you get paid by a publishing company, you're not an indie author anymore. Like, no, you're not strictly indie anymore. Like, as soon as that, like, money comes in, whether it's a deal or royalties, like, right off the bat, like, if you sign a contract with a publishing company, you are no longer strictly indie.
Well, okay, not so much so true, because if we start talking about subrights, which we did a whole episode about subrights, and because, you know, you have authors that are selling off their audiobooks to audio distribution companies and production companies. You have authors that are selling foreign rights.
But I'm saying for the paperback distro to get your letters, like, you're no longer, like, when you sign that contract, like, it gets a little sticky.
It is a little sticky. Okay. So on this episode, we're going to briefly give a rundown of best-selling lists, how they work. And we'll also talk and break down, and I think this is where we'll spend the majority of our time, the recent list published by Time Magazine, the 50 best romance novels to read right now. And I will link this article, and there's another article about the messy math of the New York Times that I will link on our On the Shelf show notes. So in all transparency, no one except the editorial staff at the New York Times knows exactly how the New York Times bestselling list works.
Yeah.
These are highly curated lists. And this is such an important thing to remember, too, as we get into the fourth quarter of 2024 and we start to see the best romance novels I read this year start publishing in like Entertainment Weekly, or you'll see an article in the New York Times, or you'll see an article in the Washington Post or the New Yorker. Look at who the authorship of those articles are, because they are often going to lack the transparency that they are an author writing that list. And that list is going to be books that they blurbed, books that their agent shares, books their publishing label shares, and their friends.
Well, and sometimes it's tough because they will use a different name than an author name. Sometimes they use their real name. Sometimes they use another pen name. So unless sometimes it's a, you have to do some sleuthing sometimes to find those, but it is possible.
Yeah, the bestseller list or any of those like best romance novels of 2024, there is going to be a lack of transparency within those lists. And I did look to see the authors of this Time Magazine list. None of them are authors. They are all staff writers for Time Magazine. So, because I did go looking. But before we get into the Time Magazine list, let's talk about let's talk about the bestseller list. So I touched upon it a little bit in last week's special edition episode, where we talked about these first edition special books that we're seeing popping up. So, Elsie Silver shared on her release day, instant New York Times bestseller, instant USA Today bestseller. How are they instant? They're instant because all those pre-orders count as day one sales.
Yep, and there's an incentive because if you don't pre-order it, then the spines don't match.
Then the spines don't match. Another piece of it is, so one of the things that's been happening recent with Barnes and Noble and some other book retailers, they get their stock in early. The publisher will mail the books, the shipments out 2, sometimes 3 weeks early. These bookstores do not have space to hold them until the release date. So sometimes they're being put out a week early. Those sales do not count.
If they put them out in the store
If they
early?
put them out in the store early, those sales will not count to the New York Times sales.
Why not?
Because it is between a certain section of dates. So
Oh,
from
okay. So it's either
Monday,
pre-order or the week of, like kind of thing. Oh, okay.
sales run from Monday to Sundays, which is why you typically see everybody releasing on a Tuesday. Because traditionally, Tuesdays were publishing release days in case shipments were delayed over weekends.
That makes sense.
So, just a little bit of the science of that. Okay,
Yeah,
so.
that's why the Sunday releases always like boggle my mind. But hey.
Well, yeah, because it counts on the last week, it doesn't count for the new week of sales.
That's the thing, like I understand a Monday release, but I never understood a Sunday release.
The only thing that a Sunday release does, so like some of the authors I'm thinking that do Sunday releases, like Vi and Penelope, Vi Keel and Penelope Ward will do Sunday releases, but their paperbacks don't go live until the next day.
This is true.
It's only the
Oh, yeah, that makes
ebooks.
sense.
Okay, so New York Times, things you should know. The list is based on book sales data from a mix of sources, including bookstores, online retailers, wholesalers, and gathered over a week's time. However, it is not every bookstore. It is not every wholesaler. There have been manipulations in the past. People have figured out what bookstores count and they've had their agent or publicist buy a bunch of books from that bookstore or pre-order a bunch of books from that bookstore to help get them to the list. And there is a list out there of people that, and that's when you'll see the dagger of death on the New York Times list. That means there were questionable, large, wholesale
purchases.
Yeah.
Like, say, like a politician's book.
Yeah.
They likely get the dagger of death because there was a huge wholesaler purchase. Well, it might not have been a direct descent. It might not have been directly that politician, but maybe it was their campaign manager or a retailer that goes to their campaigning events that then sells the books at the campaigning event.
Yeah.
So categorization. Books are sorted into categories such as hardback fiction, nonfiction, and paperback. These rankings are compiled based on total sales, which is a lie. There's also an algorithm because they will not use Amazon as an outleted retail.
Are you going to tell us why?
I mean, you know, because Amazon has KDP.
Amazon has KDP, but also Amazon, Amazon doesn't differentiate between retail and publish, like authors ordering for like
ordering their own copies.
Ordering their own copies. Okay. Yeah.
Well, because authors, when they order author copies, it actually goes through like their Amazon cart.
Yeah.
But you only get charged the author fee for it. And so like there's no differential in the way that the purchase is made.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I mean, but yeah, it's leaving a large area of the market out.
It is because if you ask any author and if they look at where all of their retail sales are happening, 66% of their retail sales on average are happening through Amazon, be it ebooks, be it paperbacks. You know, I don't live in the most metropolitan of areas. My choice of buying books are like Walmart or Meijer. I think there's a Books a Million, but the last time I was there, it had three shelves of romance. So I'm going to order my books from Amazon. One, I get free shipping.
Yeah.
They come to my door. My closest independent bookstore that isn't just a used, because I have a used bookstore now in town, but my closest like new to me or new book independent bookstore is in Toledo. It's 45 minutes away. And then there's a Barnes and Noble.
Yeah.
So like we have, it's a small independent bookstore up the road, but they have very, very few romance books and it's only trad romance. Like they don't have any like indie at all.
Yeah. Okay. So the finalized rankings are published weekly in the New York Times. You can review this list on their website. The list reflects sales from a specific week, meaning ranking can change quickly. Like you can have a really big burst because it's a release week. But if all your fans buy it that first week,
it drops off.
It can drop off very quickly. And this is where the definition comes in. And I think we've talked about this. I don't know that we've really talked about, but one of the things we've talked about is author success defined as personal success. Like I make a livable wage as a full-time author.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then there's commercial success and authors like Abby Jimenez, Katie Robert, those are going to be authors that have commercial success.
Yeah.
They are I think Emily Henry is going to be that now too, I would say. Allie Hazelwood. These are people that have commercial success, meaning a book of theirs sells, they're on the list, and they're staying on the list.
Yeah.
And again, these lists are really only valid for trad pub books because it does not take any ebook sales into account.
Mm-hmm.
It is hardback. It is nonfiction and it is paperbacks.
And they're not counting Amazon. So.
And they do not count Amazon.
No. Yeah.
If you have a like direct store, that like you get like
Doesn't
books
count.
printed through a
Oh,
different
yeah, an author
printer, that
store.
doesn't
Okay.
count either, unless your store is registered as a store, but you have to have so many sales before that is possible.
Yeah, you can
Oh, okay.
register, which some authors are having to register themselves as a distributor, as an indie bookstore, especially these authors that are now hybrid authors with independently published ebooks, but traditionally printed paperbacks, for, like Sarah Kate, for example. So in order to sell her books at signings, she had to set herself, her paperbacks, she had to set herself up as a distributor indie bookstore. And it's actually now gotten to be too much, and she's closed it.
Oh, really? I didn't know
Yeah.
she closed it.
She closed her online store. She just couldn't manage it anymore. And she wasn't meeting the sales requirements to
Oh,
continue to
okay.
keep it. And she couldn't up it. It's just, you know, something has to give.
It's a
Yeah,
lot.
there's
I
just a
mean,
lot of,
it's
yeah,
a
it was a
lot.
lot.
Okay, so there was a really great article a while ago called The Murky Math of the New York Times Bestseller List. And it talks about the opaque methodology. The list methodology lacks transparency, leading to questions about r how rankings are determined. The exclusion of certain sales channels. The list does not represent the full market. It excludes data from some independent bookstores and some very large online retailers. There's also potential manipulation within the sales ranks. And I'm sorry. As much as, you know, I'm loving this current first run edition trend, that is manipulation of this list.
Oh, yeah.
So there's concerns about authors and publishers manipulating the system through strategies like bulk purchases to boost rankings. There's also a limited in diversity. The list will not fully capture the diversity of literary works potentially underrepresenting certain genres or types of books or books written by certain people.
Yeah.
You know, when you get a list and there's one person of color, not one non-white person on the list, it's a problem. And books that are winning things like the Hugo Award in sci-fi, fantasy, and stuff, half the time those books are written by people of color, and they are not New York Times bestsellers,
Not mentioned at all. Yeah.
but critically acclaimed, winning
Yeah.
global awards.
And sci-fi is a big genre. A lot of people buy, it's like up there with romance.
But then the name, you only name you see on the New York Times is Brandon Sanderson. Nice eye roll, Amanda.
I wasn't hiding it. Yeah. I have no problem with Sanderson. Like I just at the fact that that's the only, I've read the Wheel of Time.
Okay, so recently Publishers Weekly announced that they're
Wait, let
doing a
me
bestsellers list. Yeah.
a little side note. Sci-fi is one of the top five genres of
Yeah.
books.
It is.
Publishers Weekly recently announced that they have a best-selling list. And really, Publishers Weekly is an industry insider magazine. Their list is not going to have the same effect of New York Times, right? You're not going to put Publisher Weekly bestseller. All Publishers Weekly is doing is taking all sales data that comes from Circana Book Scans, which is like the Nielsen's ratings of books.
Oh,
It
okay.
tells you how many units of a book sold. And it's again, it's only physical copies. But they're using all data, including online retailers.
No ways they're including that.
So this is gonna tell, oh, it does, I'm sorry. Publishers Weekly is including digital formats in their list.
Oh, okay.
So it's a more
It's truly
cumulative
what is selling.
truth. Yes,
Well, and
that's
really, the reason to create this is to show indie bookstores what books they should be ordering to sell in their store.
Oh, yeah.
This data includes a wide range of retail outlets such as independent bookstores, chains, and online retailers. It ensures the list is comprehensive and not skewed by any single source. So they collect BookScan collects all the data. So every time a book's ISBN is scanned is sold, it's collecting that data. But a book can only be on the list for 10 consecutive weeks, and then it is retired.
Oh, that's interesting.
Here's the deal. You have an independent bookstore. You only got so much space. You know that Hooked by Emily McIntyre is selling great. You're probably keeping a steady 2 to 3 copies in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for her to be on it for 100 weeks, what does that do for you? You've already been carrying 2 to 3 copies. And potentially you're going to saturate your market. How many people are going to continue to buy new copies of Hooked?
Yeah.
Yeah, in one area, especially. Yeah.
Right. I mean, especially a smaller independent bookstore.
Yeah.
Same with like Abby like Jimenez.
My area, you might sit on those copies for like weeks if you have them for a while.
Right. So the 10 weeks makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the things that I think gets annoying with like USA Today and New York Times. Sometimes we can see the same 6 books flopping back and forth. And it's like, come on, there are new books out. Why aren't people buying those? What's wrong with those? I remember it being very frustrating when I read exclusively in the library before the indie market kind of exploded.
Yeah.
I would use the best-selling list to help me figure out what the new releases were. Like, did I miss a Julie Garwood? Did I miss a new release from this? So to have the same 7 books constantly on it, it doesn't necessarily help you buy new books.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
Okay. Well, I mean, when we were growing up, like, that's all that we had.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true.
I looked forward to the list every week to see, like, what was coming, like, what was doing good. And if it was a bestseller, it was worth, like, spending the money on the hardback sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, and, like, how many – think about, like, Harry Potter – which we all know, you know, whatever. But let's talk about, they've recovered it. They've changed it. They've box set it. And every time a new copy of that comes out, it goes on the bestseller list.
Mm-hmm.
Like, retire that shit out. We got it. Everybody loves that book. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. So if the Publisher's Weekly, so does that take that into account?
Like, it does.
So once it's there, it never comes back.
Yeah, once it's been, even if it's just getting sales because there's a new copy or a special edition out, once it has been 10 weeks on their list, they retire it.
I mean, that's good. I mean, it gives you a chance to see other things.
Yeah, well, and again, because this is a tool that's being used by bookstores. Okay, so the Washington Post bestsellers. That list is now gone. It was discontinued in 2023. The Washington Post stopped publishing its original bestseller list because they transitioned to a new system that relied on data from Amazon charts and Nielsen BookScan. Remember Washington Post? I think it's owned by Bezos now. I think he bought that up.
Oh, yeah.
I think he might have.
The decision was partly driven by the need for more comprehensive and accurate data that reflects both print and digital sales, including Kindle Unlimited reads, which previous system based on only Nielsen data. It could not fully capture how a book was actually selling. These changes also align with the fact that the Washington Post is owned by Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, making Amazon sales data more accessible and relevant to their list. So they just discontinued it. They just stopped making a list.
Honestly, like, in hindsight, like, that probably was the better choice for them.
But they do print the Amazon charts in their newspaper.
In the Post.
Yeah, but it says Amazon on it.
It does.
It's not like...
It does. So. So
I mean,
the USA...
they're doing that right.
The USA Today bestselling list. It used to be the easiest place to get your bestselling letters.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would capture ebooks and paperbacks together for the total list. But in September of 2023, it might have even been April of 2023. In 2023, they halted their list. The reason they gave is that the lady who had been doing it for 26 years retired, and they didn't know what the new list was going to look like. I'm calling bullshit.
I call bullshit too.
I'll be right back.
Okay. In February 7th of 2024, however, they did make some changes. They brought the list back, and they no longer have an ebook-only bestseller list. And this is a big deal for self-publishing authors. It's easier to sell 5,000 plus ebooks in 1 week than it is to sell 5,000 hardcover or paperback books in 1 week. For decades, traditional publishers were the gatekeepers of the publishing industry until Amazon came along with Kindle Direct Publishing. And this allowed indie authors the opportunity to self-publish without a big publishing house. It changed things, and these old guards didn't know how to deal with it, and they still don't. So now they've decided we're going to be bigger gatekeepers. We'll build a bigger wall.
Just, I guess I'm just still so surprised that they don't know how to deal with it. Like, it's been years, people.
We're going to get
Like,
into that.
how?
We're going to get into it though. We're going to get into, hold on. Okay. So.
Didn't read any of this because I was like, I want Becky to educate me.
So the playing field was leveled originally with the USA Today, but traditional publishing didn't like it. So Amazon was taking millions of dollars of their profits. On top of that, self-published author didn't need Big Pub anymore. So what does Big Pub do? They campaign to these bestseller lists and say, let's curate them tighter. Build the wall.
Oh my God,
Anyway.
why would you say that?
Because publishing is a very
She
conservative
means it.
market, and they are doing everything they can to keep people out. They do not make themselves accessible. And that's
No, they really
why there
don't.
is a level of elitism that comes from authors that are like, I'm traditionally published. There's also a level of elitism that comes for these people that are constantly like, well, my books are now in bookstores. Or the readers who say, I'll only read books I can find in my Barnes and Noble. Fuck you and your Barnes and Noble. And indie
I think
bookstores
it's
are
really
some of the
funny when people.
biggest
Well, yeah, but I
gatekeepers.
think it's so funny when people are like, I'm only going to shop at Barnes and Noble because Amazon's the worst. But it's like Barnes and Noble was the worst like 4 years ago.
Amazon was
Yeah.
the, or Barnes and Noble was the worst in all of the 90s. I mean, I know that Amanda knows this. Remember, like, they would come into towns,
Yeah.
close down the indie mom and pop bookstores and newsstands. And I mean, it drove Main Street newsstands out of business.
Yeah. I didn't grow up with a main street, so I don't know what that one's like.
So basically, all these changes to the lists are an attempt to put traditional publishing houses back in a position of power and leave self-publishing authors out of the equation, which again, we're seeing, which is why these authors are clamoring for these paperback distribution deals. That is now
Yeah.
the only way for an indie author to get letters. But once you sign that contract, you're no longer indie because there still is a matter of, like, we've seen it with Sarah Kate, right?
Yeah.
Source Books did not pick up her Good Brother books. They picked up a different book, a different series that she's writing exclusive for them. Because her Good Brothers is just a little too taboo right now for Source Books. So they are still going to have an editorial control. You're not, just because you sign with them does not mean every book you publish is now going to be in that distro deal.
Yeah, I mean, and most of the authors are signing it for specific series, correct? I mean, you're not really
Some.
seeing somebody do like the whole, all of it, or are you?
Oh, sure. Sophie Lark
Okay.
sold all of it.
Oh, okay. I didn't
Elsie
realize she did all
Silver
of it.
has sold all of it. Lucy Score has sold all of it.
Okay, well then that's just, I'm just obviously not paying attention.
Catherine Cowles, I
There's
think,
just distro.
well, but she's just selling distro, but she hasn't sold her complete backlist yet. She has one, her beautiful series.
Yeah, the Sutter Lake, I don't think is gone
Sutter
yet.
Lake has not gone yet.
Yeah.
I
Well,
don't.
and if you look, like, it depends on the author how much they're selling too. Like, there are some authors who are only looking for, I mean, they might be looking for the distro deals for more than one series, but there are some that, like, really, I think, are only shopping one or two series because the distros, they're not buying huge numbers for most people.
Well,
There
oh
are a
wait.
couple.
It's not that they're not buying huge numbers. It's a sub-write. Some authors are only selling. It's not a deal. Does this. So if I share a Publisher's Weekly thing, it'll say like in a significant deal or a good deal. That means they got an advance or they got an above sub-write price for that title. So like Melanie Harlow sold Runaway Love to Entangled. She sold it for the flat fee of $5,000 for the sub-write, and then whatever her royalty rate is, and I think it's 22%. So she gets royalty checks starting as soon as that first Runaway Love book sells. They are buying, I think Leah froze. Are you
Nope,
there?
she's here.
Okay. But
I just wasn't moving.
they bought Laura Pavlov 17 book series.
But there was multiple series, like there
Yeah.
was 17 books, which was odd that they did it that way. Because most of the ones that we'd been seeing were like five books here, a three book here. It was just a big chunk
Yeah.
for her.
Anyway. Okay. So Sue brings up a question. She would guess that ebooks are gaining in sales over physical books. No.
No.
No. Right now, oh, and Jenny answers it. Physical books are back to it was coming very close in 2021. At the end of 2021, it was a discrepancy of like a plus six. Like I think it was 56% of all books sold were physical books. It was almost 50-50 like in 2001. But at the end of 2023, it had gone back to 66% of titles sold were paperback.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, especially with all these distro deals and special editions and
And I think that I've said this before, there is a level of classism to owning books. If we look back in history, the high class, the higher echelon of society are the ones that own the books, own the libraries, other than the religious cultures and people. The average person could not afford a book.
Yeah, that's
And
true.
so book consumption, having to buy the paperbacks, and I say this as I have walls covered in books, the consumptionism of books is a status symbol. And I think even younger generations who are more like the iPad generation, the tech-heavy kids, they want the physical books. My girl child has a Kindle, she has an iPad, she has a phone. She likes her physical books.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had physical books, but I lost several in a hurricane years ago. And for the longest time, I didn't build it back up. And I didn't really start doing it until about 2022.
Yeah.
And now I have them everywhere. So
Well,
yeah.
but a lot of these people that are buying the physical books, that's how they're reading them too,
Yeah, that's
though.
true, and I
Like
don't.
I have stacks behind me, but I don't read them. Like they're just pretty on my shelves. And that's something too. Like it's not that the ebooks and the e-readers are going away, but more people are actually reading the physical books again. And like there was a boom where
True.
less people were reading the physical books. But it's like one of those like novelty things where the e-readers were new and like
Yeah.
different. And so I think that's part of it too, is like people are going back to that physical like hold when they're reading.
Yeah. I read faster on my ebook than I read a physical book.
Oh goodness, it takes me like twice as long to read a paperback.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Okay, so we talk about the list. We're going to talk about now. We've talked about bestseller lists, those curated top lists that are going to come out here in the coming months. They're bullshit. Don't read them. They have zero value. But now I want to talk about the Time Magazine 50 romance books to read right now. And what we think doesn't belong on this list and ones we think were overlooked. Now, again, I will link this article on our On the Shelf show notes. We are not going to go through every book that was listed because there are 50 of them. But there are some highlights.
It's the timeless doc, right?
Yeah, it's the timeless doc.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Leah's bumping in here a little unprepared. I didn't even know.
I'm prepared. It's been a long week.
It's fine. It's
just
fine.
Just ignore me.
Okay, so the list itself. There is not one indie published book on this list. The only one. I guess there are technically two that were originally published as independent, but have been picked up since. And I mean full rights picked up. So Icebreaker by Hannah Grace, originally indie published, full rights picked up. That is a fully trad-pubbed book now. The other one is Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert. Again, that was originally a full indie published book. I think it sat for 1 week as indie published, and she sold it off to, I think it went to Berkeley.
I think so, too.
Every other book on this list is trad. Well, technically, Pride and Prejudice is an indie published book that got bought by a publisher. But, okay, that's the other piece in this book, on this list. So let's talk about the list, first of all. Let's start with that. The old books. There are some dated books on here that they had in here.
There's some really dated books on here.
There are.
Cecilia by Frances Burney. Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Friday's Child by Georgette Heyer. The Price of Salt by Claire Morgan. I mean, you can leave Loretta Chase alone. I just think that the classics... Anything published previous to 2000, well, maybe 1990. Anything published, because Indigo by Beverly Jenkins is on here, and that book holds up, and that book is well done.
Yeah, Jewels of the Sun was 1999.
Miss Bev, so.
It's Miss Bev.
But I think before, like, 1900, like, it's kind of.
Well, not, yes.
It just doesn't fit in this world. Because that's the thing, like the classics, they're classics for a reason now. Like they have an entire classification.
Yeah.
And Casey McQuiston is not the only author in the entire world, or Alexis Hall. They are not the only authors in the world to write queer romance well.
But you would think that they are because they're the only ones that really ever get talked about.
Well, I guess TJ Alexander is on here, and they are exceptional. I do like their books. Casey's books are fine. I think Alexis Hall books are fine. But I think that there are better representation, that we don't need to see these names. And I think that's the big thing with this list that was my... Xenia by Rebecca Weatherspoon is also an indie published book that got picked up. It might not have gotten picked up. That might be a full indie.
Yeah, I thought it was still indie. I didn't think
it might be full indie. I might be wrong on that one. But overall, this list is very much dictated by, I think this is a TikTok list, a BookTok list. This is a young millennial. Gen Z list. This is not the romances of Gen X. This is not the romances of a wider
market. But some of these I really wouldn't even consider romances either, though. Well,
but, you know, hey, The Devil Did Not Make the List.
Well, I understand that. But even some of these ones on here, like, I don't.
Well, let's talk about,
like, romance adjacent.
So let's talk about the names that are left off this list. Even if we don't have a specific book for them, let's talk about some of these cornerstone authors of current romance that are left off this list. Kathleen Woodwiss. How many people's moms were reading a Kathleen Woodwiss, and that was like one of the first romances you've ever read?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're problematic, but everybody read one.
Well, but also, look at the when they were written.
Look at when they're written. I had another
But I
author
think
that
that's
came.
something too. There's a lot of problematic authors from like the 80s and early 90s. The authors themselves are not problematic. The books themselves are problematic
But
now.
they
But
have
like,
Twilight on here,
well, but
which is
that's
horribly written and rapey and
well,
terrible.
yeah, I'm
Yeah,
saying,
but you're
but
gonna
I'm not
get
even
the.
counting that as like in the realm of good. I'm talking good authors that are well established, that there's no consent in their books. And like that is one of the things. Like Twilight was like, or like it was has like a cult following now. So it's one of those ones that it's always going to be on a list
Okay, but
because
that's on the list, but they left off 50 Shades of Grey, which, if you think about it,
no, this is true.
yeah.
okay, 50 Shades of Grey is Twilight fan fiction. We all know the history of 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes.
But what 50 Shades of Grey was a commercial success. She has hardly written anything outside of that sphere, and she's making millions
Has she
of
written any?
dollars.
Oh no, she did write that one book.
She read the Mister book.
Yeah, but that was that one, and I think there might have been one other one that she wrote outside of that world, but
Right. And now she's just re rewriting the books in other people's points of view.
yeah.
Which you do, you babe.
I mean, people are spending money on it.
And Abby Jimenez is on here, and you've got Sarah McLean. Everybody wants to talk about the 9 rules to break, but there's only one Lisa Kleypas. Like, oh, okay.
There's
Well, but even
one
like there's
Nora
one Beverly
Roberts.
Jenkins,
There's
like
only, yeah. And the
there's
Nora
no like
Roberts they
Eloisa
picked,
James.
no Eloisa James, and the Nora Roberts they picked.
I get it because if you're leaning into where the paranormal stuff started, like that is one of her earlier where she gets a little mystical. Like that's like the second trilogy that she wrote before she started getting into the mystical like
But that's
kind
not
of
one of her
stuff.
better books, though, is it?
That series is really good. This third book in that series is probably one of my favorites, but they don't have any of her romantic suspense.
Like,
There are no romantic suspense books on here.
right. And if you want to get into a trilogy of Nora Roberts that's really truly Nora Roberts, go with the Black Dahlia, the ones with the flowers, like the Red Lily and
Well, but
the three
even in that
women.
vein, like they picked Antimony's book for Julia Quinn. Like, if you're gonna pick a Julia Quinn book, that is not the book to go with.
It's really not. It just this it
It befuddles
confuses
me.
me.
This list
Yes.
befuddles me.
Well, and we got Beverly Jenkins and we got Jasmine Gilroy, but again, Jasmine Gilroy, meh, they're lower steam fade. I mean, I don't know. They're not really, they're like Emily Henry. They're like not true into the depth of romance. We did get one Brenda Jackson book, but Brenda Jackson, her brand is her Harlequin books. And it's not a Harlequin book. Who wrote the list? The list was written. Okay, I can tell you who wrote the list. This project is le led by Lucy Feldman, Annabella Guterman, Megan McCloskey, and Meg Zuckin, with additional writing and reporting by Judy Berman, Shannon Carlin, Mattia. I'm going to butcher that. I'm not going to even say. Anyway, I'll link. It's at the bottom of the
Yeah.
article.
But they're all, you said they're all like Times.
They're
They all
all
work for the Times.
staff members, staff
Yeah.
writers, staff researchers within the Times. Okay, so we talked about books we didn't think. What books, even if we stick in the vein, what book authors, and we all have our favorite authors, like, do I love Sawyer Bennett? Yes. Do I think Sawyer's books should be on this 50 list? Not necessarily. But I do think Arena Morgan would be okay on this list.
I
Comes in
think
the
a Julie
trad pub line.
Garwood should have made this
I
list.
think they should have had some romantic suspense on here, period. I don't know of any of these that are really romantic suspense. Are there?
No, there's no romantic
No.
suspense. Your trad pub romantic suspense is going to be Julie Garwood. There, Jennifer Cruzy is not on this list.
But there's a lot of like trad pub, like T.O. Fallon, like she's newer, but she's a trad pub romantic
No,
suspense, like
Sylvia Day. Sylvia
Sylvia Day,
Day. I
like all of
mean, you
those, like
know.
there's so many quality authors that are trad pub that could have made this list that would have had a wider variety of subgenre to it.
Right. And you can tell that these people obviously read historical, they read trendy, and the paranormal that they're going to read are going to be an not to make to be mean or anything, the easily digestible paranormal. It is Stephanie Meyer,
Nalini Singh.
Nalini Singh, and you have Susan
J.R.
Brockman
Ward.
and Cressley Cole.
Well, I mean, I think J.R. Ward, I mean, her books are like they're big chunky books. And I'm surprised they put the third book in her Black Dagger Brotherhood. It's like book three. It's not even book one.
Well, but
Like,
I think that they were saying like these are the best within the series because the Talia Hibbert book they picked is not, and they
yeah.
went with The Bride Test by Helen Hong and not the Kiss Quotient.
Gotcha. Yeah, which
Oh,
you
okay,
would
so
have,
they're saying, all
honestly,
right, yeah, I
you
got it.
would have thought they would have went with the Kiss Quotient because that's the more recognizable one by her.
And
But
like the what book is it? Crazy Rich Asians. I don't think that's a romance. It's more of a family saga. I mean, there's
yeah.
romantic elements to it. I don't think it's really.
I think it's more women's fiction.
It is. Okay, but so I went to look and I went to see, especially some of these authors that have recently been picked up by Trad Pub. There's no Olivia Day, there's no Fat Rep on this
Yeah.
entire because even Zenny by Rebecca Weatherspoon, she is not plus size. Get a Life, Chloe Brown, I guess. I
I was
think
gonna
she,
say, yeah, the tally book, right?
yeah, Get a Life, Chloe Brown is a plus size, but nobody else. So where's Olivia Dade?
Yeah, that's a
What,
big
where's Jennifer
miss.
Cruzy? Like Bet Me should have been on this list.
That's such a good book.
And even though there's some problematic words in it, overall that was one of the first commercially successful fat rep books.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really surprised Olivia Dade's not on here.
There's not a Penny Reed book
Yeah.
on this list. Not a Knitting in
That's
the
really.
City, no Winston Brothers. What the fuck?
Well, but that's the thing. Like, you have to wonder, like, what these people are reading. Like, they're clearly not reading indie romance. They're clearly not reading a wide variety of things. Like, they're reading a specific niche and they picked books from that. It's like, you can't give us a list of 50 of the best books if you're not reading outside of like your little bubble.
And in the
Yeah.
world of like Kennedy Ryan, they picked Before I Let Go, which is her first traditionally published book, but I don't think it's her best offering in her books. Why wouldn't you have picked one of her basketball books that's really or real or, you know what I mean?
I
Yeah,
think
but
Real is
isn't
like
like,
one of her best books.
but yeah, isn't the Before I Let Go, aren't they producing that for a movie or something?
They are.
So
It's Universal
I
picked
wonder
it.
if that had something partially to do with some of the picks, because it seems like,
Well, you figure Crazy Rich Asians is a TV
Well,
show.
that's true. Yeah, but I mean, like you said, that one's not really romance. So,
Yeah, it's
but I don't know. I don't know how they picked it. You can't discern from.
Angela M. Lopez, a trad pub book
Yeah.
with Fat Rep and a story of American culture, because that's the other thing that I noticed in these books. Like, I'm sorry, Dating Dr. Dill by Nisha Sharma, that was the most boring and terrible book I have ever read. Like, it was awful. I
Mean, I
DNF'd
can
that
honestly
shit.
say I haven't read any of these books except the paranormal and fantasy books, so.
I've read a couple and like they were
Hannah
fine.
Grace is the biggest pile of steaming garbage. There's no Elle Kennedy or Serena Bowen on this list.
Yeah.
How the deal was ground. I mean, it was.
It was fairly groundbreaking when it came out.
And but it was also like that was one of those titles that pushed into book talk and made it explode. What about Mariana Zapata?
Like, oh, yeah.
The Wall of Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. How is that not on here? It's because it's indie published and it just got picked up by TradPub. I mean, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
these people, I don't know.
Their choices are questionable.
I'm shocked that Does It Hurt by H.D. Carlton, that there is no mention of H.D. Carlton, because if you want to talk about success, you can love or hate her books. This is not about that.
Yeah.
She has not traditionally published anything.
Nope.
She sold her first novella to Montlake for $1.5 million. They paid over seven figures for 40,000 words from her. And that is the only time she has sold anything. She even owns all her own paperback distribution. She has not sold to anybody. They come and knock in. She says no.
Nope, because the minute she opens her store, it sells out in 5 seconds every time.
And that's the thing. Like, so why isn't a book like Does It Hurt by H.D. Carlton, particularly when we start talking about this seeping of dark romance into mainstream? And is there a Colleen Hoover on this list?
No, which actually I was surprised by.
Me too.
Because Colleen Hoover is as much romance as Emily Henry is romance.
I'd actually say Emily Henry is more romance than Colleen Hoover.
In a Jam by Kate Canterbury, again, fully indie published, but it's, 2 years later and people are still talking about it still. Yep. And it's shocking to me. And I think it's because Kate has not wanted to sell, but it's shocking to me that Kate hasn't gotten a distro list on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like you said, though, that could just be her not wanting to.
Yeah. It could be. Praise by Sarah Kate.
We don't know how many people are getting approached that we're not hearing about.
So even if we don't do 50 Shades of Grey, what about Praised by Sarah Kate? Because that opened 50 Shades of Grey. We saw the BDSM lifestyle. We saw, but a book like Praised, which is now in every Target, Walmart, and grocery store, airport, newsstand you can think of, it opened the world into kink and kink in our romance and really pushed it forward. How are you not listing that?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they kind of shied away from the kink for the most part. And like I said, I don't know all of these books, but it seems like that's not on here.
There's not a lot of kink. There's no taboo.
There's not a Katie Robert book.
Yeah, which I don't get at all.
There is not. It's one of those things. Like if you're looking at the style of book, they're very safe.
Oh yeah, Jenny says Rebecca Yarros. Where's Rebecca Yarros?
Well, so yes, but I think part of it is because Fourth Wing isn't a whole story. If you look at these books, all of these end in a single HEA at the end of them, even though it's part of a series. None of these are cliffhanger books.
That is true.
But we know Things We Left Unfinished by Rebecca Yarros. That ends in an HEA.
The last letter? No.
Oh, the last letters?
The lost letters. Like that, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's so many options for authors who are out there where had they just read something else by them, that would have been a really good option.
Jenny's quoting the article. It says Sarah J. Maas, A Court of Thorns and Roses, and Rebecca Yarros's Fourth Wing do not appear on this list, as we aim to draw a line between fantasy books with romantic elements and romance books with fantastical elements. And I call this as bullshit, because we are now dubbing these romantasy. Jennifer Armentrout's not
but again,
on here.
Yeah, Jennifer Armentrout's not on there. But then, Alona Andrews is on there, and they write, it's urban fantasy, but but it's still, it's fantasy. I
It's
mean, the books
fantasy,
are
yeah.
fantasy. I mean, and I have no problem with the one they picked because I will read anything they write, but it's still fantasy.
But how do you include her? But you're not going to include Jennifer Armentrout. You're not going to
Exactly.
include Sarah J. Maas. You're not going to include Rebecca Yarros. But also, they have books
Well,
that
but
are
also, like,
other.
if you're not going to include them, that's one thing, but don't say we're not including it because of this.
There's
Like,
not a
I
Tessa
mean,
Bailey book on here either, you guys.
oh, yeah, true.
It happened one summer, which, give or take, you love or hate it.
Yeah, not like,
It was huge,
But it
but
was
it was
huge.
huge.
And again, I think it's a better written book than Icebreakers.
Oh,
It's
yeah,
better.
I loved It
It
Happened
is
One
a
Summer, so.
well-written book. I just hated the
Yeah,
story.
I liked it. So, I mean,
I mean,
I'm surprised. I
queer
like book two
authors,
better than I like the
Tal
first one.
Bauer, Eden
Yeah.
Finley, Saxon James, Max Walker.
Max Walker, yeah.
Where are the representation there?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's some dudes on this list, but the queer people that they picked, there's two non-binary people. I guess all three are non-binary. Casey McQuiston, Alexis Hall, and TJ Alexander are all non-binary. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you're sticking with traditionally published and you're trying to have that type of representation, like, I don't see how Tal Bauer doesn't make the list.
Because he's indie published. Because they're
Oh.
snobs.
Max is indie published.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I mean, it's like it's how they said they draw the lines. And I mean, I get it. Like, they obviously took, a historical section, a paranormal section, and a contemporary romance section. And left mostly everything else out, threw in a couple of,
Yeah.
different
But
ones
that's the
here and
thing,
there. And
they left so many good books and good authors, even just trad good books and trad good authors, like on the table, and put people that are not as deserving because their books are not that great. Like, they're editorially not good. Like, the story is fine, but like the book itself is not structured well.
So I do think we have to come back as a podcast and create our own top 25, top 50 romances. I mean, we've talked about our gateway romances. We've talked about how we
Yeah.
got here with the books we've read in the past. But I think that we need to come back and kind of create our own little starter pack of romances, because that's basically what this list is supposed to be. Like, these are all
Yeah.
really safe choices. These are all really easily accessible books. So even if we pick books that we know will be in libraries, I do think that we have to come back and provide a more reader. And because Jenny shares it in here, is that the writers of this article began early 2024 by speaking with booksellers, editors, authors, and industry experts. So
There you
oftentimes,
go.
what these lists are leaving out are the readers, the people that are immersed. And I venture to guess that if we started asking influencers, especially some of the influencers that are true book influencers, not just large
Yeah.
following that give book recommendations. But if we start looking at some of the real book influencers, like Rachel Fitz or Fit Rachel,
Fit teacher Rachel. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, if we start looking, there's Danny, there's a couple others. If we start asking them, I bet they would be like, yeah, that's a great list, but I really think these would be better on this list.
Yeah.
Because those are not the industry insiders this article asked.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we've talked about that list, I promise we'll be back sometime in the next couple of months with our own top list. And we've also stopped looking for best-selling bullshit on book covers, because bestseller does not mean good.
Not anymore.
No. Okay, so guess what time it is?
It's that time for Book
Book of the Week. It's Book of the Week time. Leah, what's your Book of the Week?
Let me tell you, I had a rough reading week this week. It's been a couple weeks. But I actually went diving back into Erin Nicholas's backlist this week because I really needed just books that I knew that were going to satisfy me. Like, so I did like a multi-read today because, like I said, it's been a long week. I had a ton of work to do. But I was reading her some of the books that she's redone. So I was in the Bad Boys of the Bayou series. They had been published previously, and she kind of recreated a world with this whole series, and she moved them like all to Bad Louisiana. And so you get little snippets of like her New Orleans series and Autry and all that stuff. But yeah, so they're fun, comfort, easy reads.
Yeah, and her next book of Erin Nicole, I think we get another someone out of the Bad Boys. It's called Royal to Rags or
Rags to Royal, I
Rags to
think.
Royal.
But he's the royal, and yeah, so.
Yeah, she ditched him.
Wow.
He's been pining.
He has been pining. I'm very excited for that. But yeah. But it was nice to like kind of visit this world, and they're all standalones, but it was just they're a
Nice.
nice, easy, like mental like refreshers for me.
Nice. Amanda, what's your book of the week?
So my book of the week is A Kingdom of Flesh and Fire by Jennifer L. Armentrout. That is book two in the From Blood and Ash series. I've finally started it. I am down this rabbit hole.
You're never coming out.
So yeah, probably not. The first book, there's a lot of like I answer questions, you're getting a lot of setup, and then like they really start like bringing all of the answers out in the second book. And I mean, I get it. I get why people are completely obsessed with the series. I mean, Poppy and Castile are, it's, you know, I'm in it. I'm waiting on book three from the library right now. I'm scared because I know some people are like, they get start getting a little upset around book three. So we're gonna see how it goes. But like I put away both of those books and they're over 600 pages, I think in 3 days. So
Oh my
I'm
book.
in it. So we'll see how it
She's
goes.
never coming out of the
No.
fantasy
No,
world.
I'm very much in my fantasy paranormal. I mean, it is I'm
We'll see you
there.
in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, probably the rest of the year.
Probably the rest of the year. Her list at the end of the year is all going to be like Romantasy, Tessa Hale.
Yeah, you're gonna have like my first few months of the year. It's like my Aurora Rose Reynolds and my Jessica Prince, and then you're gonna roll like the
There's
complete
a hard
opposite.
left.
Yeah.
She goes left. Okay, so my book of the week, and I'll be really honest, if it's not podcast prep and it is not work prep, I probably am not reading it. But I did do some prep this week because Thursday night of this week, August 15th, I have a happy hour with this second three set of authors, the second set of three authors from the Bang Brothers series, the hockey series. I'm gonna talk with Gina Azee, Catherine Fox, and Kelly Jameson about their Bang Brother books. I guess that's the better way to say it. Anyway, my book of
Okay,
the
that
week.
was a really roundabout way to get there.
My book of the week is Light 'Em Up by Kelly Jameson. It is book five in the Bang Brothers multi-author series. This is actually the story of Annie Bang. She's a skating coach for the New York Bears. And one of the players that's just been traded to the team is Logan Coates. And there's some bad blood. He sent her brother to the hospital with an injury. And so there's some hate and some anger and a mama getting involved.
Uh-oh.
Their mama's fierce.
But I really am enjoying these books and I'm excited to dive in. I've never read Catherine Fox before, so I dived into that one a little later this afternoon and I'm excited to read through that and get to know her as an author. Because, you know, I'm always excited about a new to me author. Okay, so that's my book of the week. We don't have any Patreon updates. Patreon swag packs are out. No swag pack is the same. No two swag packs are the same. It is.
They're packed full.
They are super
Packed.
sized. Has anybody, have you guys gotten yours yet?
Not
I got
yet. I
mine
saw
and
the
I opened it
tracking.
today.
I think it's
It
tomorrow.
is super
It is
sized.
super sized. So it's just everything. We've been doing swag packs for 2 years. And so I mixed things up and sent out stuff that we've had for the last 2 years just to kind of give everybody a refresh. Maybe you got Marie Johnston chapstick and some
I did not get any
stickers.
of
Talking
that.
about the hot commodities. So those went out. Anyway, make sure you come back here Wednesday night for our discussion of The Next Best Fling by Gabriela Gomez. I am halfway into this audiobook. Well, actually, I have like 2 hours left of this audiobook. Guys, there's so much in this book. It's single point of view. I'm so excited for all of us to read it. I cannot wait to talk about it on Wednesday. If you are reading it right now, please stop into my DMs and let me know what you think and how's your reading going. Because nobody's reading it yet, and I have thoughts and I have things to rage about and to
I'll
talk
be
about.
reading it tomorrow.
So there are those things. And then we're back next Sunday night with our back to school episode.
Yes.
I
Yay.
don't know exactly how it's back to school. I think we're going to do some teachers, maybe some students, but not student teachers.
No.
So we'll be back with our back to school episode next week. And you can currently find a list of books for our upcoming Wednesday episodes on our website. And don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates. Join our community of romance enthusiasts. You can join our free tier on Patreon, or you can join our Discord to get all the information. Sign up for our newsletter. Leah sends it out every week. Sometimes I don't even have to remind her she does it.
I did forget this week, but
But
I
you
did
sent
it
it
yesterday.
yesterday.
I did. Well, because on Friday I was like, oh crap, I forgot to do that. I need to do that. I
I
usually have like reminders pop up, but I didn't this week. And then like Friday was a hellish day,
Well,
people,
and I had
but
Balloon Fest
it
here in our
happened.
area, and I volunteered all day yesterday at the Balloon Fest, so I never looked at my phone. And then I came home and I'm like, Leah sent out the newsletter. Yay!
It was not as padded as sometimes it is because I was like, I don't know what needs to go in here. So I got all the important things and things
Yeah.
that I remembered that needs to go in there. But hey, it's okay. That's why
Well,
we send them out every week.
and if you're enjoying our Submit Discuss episodes, we actually are going to be in this next newsletter asking for some help for November. But we'll tell you why there will be a post and then in the website. So make sure you subscribe to our newsletter so you can help us with November. If you love this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, share it with your friends, and support us by bringing more. Oh, this is your way of supporting us to bring you more exciting content each week. Hey, thanks for hanging out. Thank you for letting me nerd about bestsellers list.
Thank you. We enjoyed it, the information. I did.
Until next time, everybody.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at BuzzingAboutRomance or on Twitter at BuzzingRomance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.